Welcome to the Stories for Nerds podcast. And now, with another epic episode, here are your hosts for SFN.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to episode 9.8 of the Stories for Nerds podcast, the show featuring a group of sci-fi and fantasy authors who not only love to discuss the latest adventures in books, TV, film, video games, anime, and all other forms of nerd entertainment, but they read and collaborate stories as well. And I have the pleasure of being here with Abby Goldsmith and Raphael M. Jordan.
Abby, I like how you are so caught off guard. Wait, no clap. We're not doing a clap. We don't need no claps eight seasons into this anymore.
I was giving a countdown to me, not countdown to clap.
Oh, no, that's totally fine.
That's your job, Raph. You do the clap.
I do the clap, and we fail miserably every instance we try to do it anyway. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, there have been a couple instances where we've actually gotten lucky and we actually do it simultaneously, but more often times than not, I still have to figure out how to, like, manually line up that one instance of breaking. And that gummit. Okay, so folks, disclaimer. We're having some issues with our recording platform. So you're probably not going to notice this since Scott is recording his end, but we keep getting instances where our people get kicked out from time to time. So, Scott, you were probably hearing me explain this to the listeners, right?
Our people are not getting kicked out. I am getting kicked out, which may be the internet trying to tell me something or the universe in general.
It's so bizarre, man. It's so bizarre. It's only started getting this funky, like the past, what, three or four recordings that we've done. So I'm gonna reach out to support next once we're done with this and see if they.
Well, I tried shutting a bunch of tabs and closing a couple applications on the bizarre off chance that I was having a memory crash or something.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Well, whatever it is, what it is. I mean, you're still recording your part anyway, so it's all good. The show must go on one way or another. So, to that end, folks, yeah, we are going to be starting our next Story by Nerds segment. But before we get to that, we always like to get some updates with the authors and see what they've been up to on their personal projects. So, starting with you, Miss Abby, what have you been up to on the running front?
Well, last week I handed in edits to Podium, final edits for book 4.
Mm-hmm.
4, yeah, I think so.
It's 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I don't know which book. Yeah. So many, I can't figure out which is which.
One of them.
Something like that, right? Like, so that, and now I'm kind of just diving into like some last minute edits on book 5 because that's like I need to hand in that manuscript in July.
And okay.
So I want to like just. The last two books of the Torth series were less edited than the first 4 because they were kind of like more recently written, having
okay.
to cover them with a
fine. Oh, okay, gotcha, gotcha.
Times. Yeah, so.
I was under the impression that you meant, I was like, oh, I didn't need to edit those latter books because I was in such a good flow of things and I already read everything. Everything was just flawless and a perfect.
Yeah.
Well, right.
I mean, honestly, I think they are better because I think later books in a series, depending on how you write the series.
Well, yeah.
It's like a house of cards and the foundation is strong. Mm-hmm. And then when you're building on top of that, the later books no longer like require as much.
You don't have to do a lot of backpedaling instances
exactly.
Because you've been building up the series for so long to get to these points, you actually know like how everything's supposed to like naturally flow and everything.
Yeah,
so,
I know how the story goes. I've daydreamed it 8 million times. Like I've, mm-hmm. it's been years. I've seen it all in my mind. So,
right.
Yeah. So those last few books like wrote themselves pretty much, but yeah. At the same time, they're kind of like second draft, third draft material. They're not like 800th draft. material.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. I mean, I don't think they really need that much work, but there's a few things I wanted to tighten up.
Yeah, so. That's fair. Very cool. And then book 3 is going to be coming out pretty soon.
Yes, May 7th. And guess what? I scheduled the last chapters of the Tworth series on Royal Road. So the last chapter, the very epilogue of the whole series, is coming out on May 7th on Royal Road.
Oh, nice simultaneous. It's like a... Yeah.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. It's gonna be a little sad to see all that. It's been a year and a half of like daily posts. So it's like, oh man. You know, and I don't know what'll happen to my audience. Like, this is just the way things go, I guess.
But, right. But haven't you started like another series?
I have, but I'm not posting it in public yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm posting it on Patreon on my website.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, on my website with Patreon as the paywall.
Okay.
So I'm writing that slowly but surely, but I'm kind of having to take a little break while I do these edits, and I'm going to JordanCon this coming weekend, which is a big convention in Atlanta, Georgia, for fans of the Wheel of Time, but also for writers and authors and readers and crazy people.
So, mm-hmm.
yeah, and they have a Lit RPG track for the first time, which is...
Oh!
Yes. Yeah, Lit RPG and Progression Fantasy, which is what I write. And so Matt Dinneman's going to be there. He's the guy that wrote Dungeon Crawler Carl and like a whole bunch of kind of cool, awesome people in that genre. And I'm going to be speaking on panels and sitting at a booth. So it'll be fun for me. My first time. And, you know, I'm a huge Wheel of Time fan. So for me, it's like, you know, I've kind of wanted to go to this convention for years and years and years, but I just never had a good excuse.
Yeah, this is your first Dragon Con, your first Jordan Con.
Yeah.
Nice, yeah. And I've, even though it was like right in my backyard, I only went once, but the one time I did go, it was so much fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy it even more since you're not only going to be like, you know, just in your element, but also going to be a panelist and everything. So have a good time.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, for sure. And how about you, Mr. Parkin?
Still working on the Dragon novel. You know, not quick. I'm only about 20,000 words into it, but, you know, progressing, which is, you know, 20,000 more words than I had a month ago.
Yes.
So,
for sure.
There you go.
100%.
No, I got distracted a little bit by reading manuscripts for other people. I'm in a novel critique group.
Oh.
And we just started up. This is our first time, so we're just discovering... what level each of us is at.
Oh. have there been any revelations for some that are like, maybe you should reconsider?
This could be listened to by anyone anywhere in the world. I'm just going to leave it.
Oh, yep.
The problem with any kind of novel group is, A, unless you read the entire novel, which is too much to ask in a month.
Yes.
If you're doing a critique, right? Then you have to do a segment. Every time you do a segment, you get a segment, not a whole story. Mm-hmm. So you see up to a point. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It is.
I find this kind of thing instructive mainly because it, in critiquing other people's manuscripts, it helps me understand my own writing process better.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy doing this sort of things. And it's been, golly, 8 or 10 years since I've been in writing groups. So.
Yeah. I remember when I was in Savannah, when I was still in Savannah, and I was just starting out like my writing career. And I was like trying to be as much of a sponge as possible. And I found that there's a local writing group. And it was the same thing. Like, you could tell which ones wrote more than others, but at the same time, I was able to decipher what strengths and what weaknesses I had in my own writing, just because I was able to analyze and see how everyone's specific methods were, you know, went and everything.
And for those of you with an abundance of self-confidence, you may know that yours is the best prose in the history of the universe. For those of us who struggle a little bit, seeing other people's prose is,
yes,
and the way they structure scenes and whatnot else is actually heartening sometimes. You're not as bad as you fear you are.
Yeah, yeah. It can be humbling in both ways.
Both ways.
Mm-hmm. Aside from submitting those short stories for the anthologies, I pretty much taken a break.
What was the deadline for that?
Oh, early April.
I assume I've missed it, so darn.
Well, I mean, you got a submission via our collaboration, but to that end. But beyond that, I took a break from anything else beyond this latest story by Nerd Sentiment, which I managed to knock out fairly quickly. I actually did it all in one day, and I spent yesterday and early parts of this afternoon just cleaning it up and everything. But we'll get to that portion of the podcast eventually after we do a brief portion discussing what the latest nerdy bit of stuff we've been up to since the last meetup. So Abby, with all your writing and creative endeavors, have you been able to take a step back and take in some of the other aspects of nerdy multimedia?
I watched all 9 episodes of Shogun that have come out so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
and?
Yeah, it's a good show.
Okay.
Great production value. You know, to be honest, so I'm hypercritical. I think that Blue Eye Samurai was better. More well-written.
Wow.
Yeah. But
I mean, for what it's worth, Blue Eyed Samurai pretty it was pretty up there.
yeah, that was firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, right.
This one, it's a little bit melodramatic for my tastes. Like it's very, you know, dramatic and kind of emo, but it's got to me it feels a little YA where it's like, all right, guys, like I know you're being hyper dramatic, but just chill out a little bit. You know, like I'm thinking to myself with the main like white guy that's in Japan, I'm like, you know, if you just learned some Japanese, you wouldn't have this many problems, guy. Like, why are you have you've been in the country for like months and months and you haven't learned any Japanese yet? I mean, come on. Like,
so it sounds, is this based on James Clavell's novel?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay.
And that's what I was about to say, that the melodrama of this show might just be a reference to, well, the age and when the novel itself was written.
Yes, it was published, I think, in like 1970 or 1975.
It was in the 70s, I think, yeah.
Right. I actually never read it. I've heard it's really good, and I probably should read it at some point. But, you know, it's definitely, it does have like a nice epic feeling, and I do like, it's based on true history. I was reading a little about that, and it's funny, but, you know, reading about the actual thing that happened was kind of more exciting and better than what they're showing on the TV show. So I'm kind of like, well, that's interesting. Like, I kind of wish they would have followed the actual history a little more. But,
yeah.
Anyway, but it's still interesting to watch, and it's like, you know, it's dramatic, and there's lots of beheadings and, you know, crying girls trying to kill themselves and all that.
As they did in feudal Japan.
Yeah, exactly. You know how it is. Haikus.
Yep. Dime a dozen. It's just another Tuesday, right?
Right, right, right.
Where's this playing again?
This is on Hulu.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I don't have access to it, so I don't feel bad about missing it. Good.
Well, Hulu and or FX, but But okay, so 9 episodes in. Do you know exactly how long the season's going to be?
I've heard it's going to be 10 total.
Okay, so, okay, so
yeah. So this last episode had a very dramatic ending, and you're like, oh, where, you know, good cliffhanger.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, so overall, I'm going to say I recommend it. I mean, it's got great production value. It's cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. How about you, Scott?
Watched a really odd little, first season of a really odd little series called Afterlife.
That sounds familiar. Is that an anime?
No, it's a live action series, and I'm losing the name of the main character. Anyway, it's a really fun, irreverent little look at a guy whose wife died of cancer, and he's gotten kind of snarky, and he's good-natured but a little mean-spirited, if that makes any sense. He calls it his superpower, and he basically tells the truth as he sees it all the time, which is not always a good thing. So it's a very fun little situation comedy, for what it's worth. Okay. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm completely thinking of a different show.
Yeah.
And it's on Netflix, right?
It's on Netflix, gotcha. Yeah. Watched Parasite the Grey, also on Netflix, which is a live action. It's not an adaptation of the manga / anime. It's a reimagination. So it's another story told in the same universe. And it was both really good and really frustrating, and has prompted me to start writing essays about critical essays again.
Scott, I'm looking at a preview of this. This isn't for me, is it?
Oh, no. if you don't like violence, do not watch this. It has Netflix disease to the nth degree.
My word. Nope.
Yeah.
That's a hard pass.
If you've ever seen the Parasite anime, it's a hyper-violent anime as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right.
Set in the same world.
Oh, okay, gotcha. But was it a horror, though? It wasn't really horror, was it?
It's as much horror as science fiction, but its shtick is an alien being lands and it tries to eat your brain, and one person only has half her brain eaten, so she shares the body with the parasite rather than being entirely taken over by the parasite.
How lovely.
And then she has to help, you know, stop the international conspiracy of parasites to take over Japan or Korea. Or I think this one was set in Korea, actually. So there you go. Very entertaining. I enjoyed it. Went on a bit of a forbidden movie kick. Found one of those lists of banned movies. And so I decided to go watch as many of them as I could. I made it three movies in before I gave up. So I ended up seeing I Spit on Your Grave, which is very funny. Not intentionally funny.
The bad funny.
It's really intriguing because it's not that the subject matter is bad. It's not even that the way it's presented. It was way ahead of its time. It's still ahead of its time. It's very direct about certain things, specifically sexual assault. And it's not kind. Mm. It engages in a little bit of torture porn.
Oh, no.
Before that was a thing. So, yeah, exactly. But the acting was so hideously bad. Wow, was this thing cheap, low-budget, badly acted, good subject matter. Watched a classic flick called Freaks from 1932, which was set during, basically in a circus sideshow. So the freaks were actually, you know.
That's not PC.
No, and that's part of the reason it's been entirely banned, is that it's because the actors actually were anomalous people.
Really?
So you had actual quote-unquote freaks as the actors in this show.
Oh, wow.
And this was before the Hays Commission.
Right.
And once the Hays Commission happened, they said, oh, no, we can't have films like this. And it was essentially banned elsewhere. And the third one put me off my feet and made me stop going down the list because it was just disgusting and horrifying, and it deserved to be banned, and I'm not even going to give it a name. For what it's worth. And then today I watched a movie called Project Power from a couple of years ago. Jamie Foxx, a technological drug that gives people superpowers for 5 minutes and is addictive.
Yeah.
So, an entertaining story, kind of a pseudo-cop drama, pseudo-international conspiracy, pseudo-cartel type thing, except the cartel is the government. But well done and a lot of fun. Well acted.
Cool.
Appreciated it.
Nice.
That was about it.
Okay. Hadn't done really anything different since as far as like multimedia is concerned. I'm still playing Dragon's Dogma 2. I know I should be done with the game by this point, but I am very, 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 very casual and very chill about it. I'm in no rush to complete the main storyline and stuff, just because the world is just so enriching and I love just venturing through and everything and getting my pawn and getting my character stronger and unlocking different skill sets and stuff. So yeah. Still watching X-Men 97. I watch that every Wednesday right before we get to start on recording as to avoid spoilers, because I quickly realized that this cartoon is getting the Star Wars treatment. So if you don't watch it within the first day of its airing, the internet is going to internet and spoil the crap out of it for you. But for what it's worth, I am still enjoying it. I had to text Eric after this last episode because there was a change in someone's character, and the change was so unexpected I actually shrieked. In the best way. It was a great fanboy moment. So yeah. So really happy about that. In other nerdy news though, I went to Dallas last weekend to see the solar eclipse. And I was talking to Abby about that, messaging her. I was like, did you see it? And we're sharing pictures and stuff. And holy crap. What?
Yeah, same. It was beautiful. It was
really, oh my word.
Yeah.
I mean, even a week from now, when people ask, it was like, well, what do you think about it? I'm just like, I'm speechless. I can't believe that I actually saw that. It was so, yeah. Wow. Just wow.
It's funny how, like, when, you know, the moment between when the sun is almost all fully covered and then when it's fully, fully covered.
Yeah.
It just, like, all of a sudden it's like someone turned down the lights for the entire world.
Yeah, and people say that all the time, and you're like, well, yeah, okay. But yeah, unless you're there in person, like, you don't really understand it, but it's like, but this is a massive solar light that is getting turned off like that. So if you give it in that perspective and everything, it's like, wait a minute, someone just turned off the Earth's light for a brief minute, and it was just so. And you go back and rewatch like other people's recordings and stuff, and you're watching like it gradually fade, and you're just like, is someone dimming the camera? Like, what is going on? That is so weird. But I was like, wait a minute, I was actually there when that happened. But yeah, the video, the cameras, people who've seen it in person, they notice. But when you look at the pictures or the videos of it, it doesn't do it justice. It doesn't capture what you actually saw with the naked eye. So there's this funny clip with me, when the sky was actually starting to transition to getting like really dark, I actually wanted to record that transition. And while that was happening, all these people around me started cheering. And I was like, oh, wait, what's everyone cheering for? And then I look up and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And I'm like looking, I'm actually looking at it like through my phone. And then I'm looking at like with my, you know, naked eyes, and I'm like going, like looking back with my phone and looking back with my eyes. I was like, no, this isn't the same at all. Like, the phone's not capturing it. It's not capturing it.
Yeah, we had binoculars and
oh, did you? Smart.
Yes, and yeah. with the cloud cover, you could look right at it when the whole thing was eclipsed, and you could see the solar prominences that looked like giant nuclear explosion.
Yes, right. What that was? That threw me for a loop. I That was just mind-boggling. It's like, how can I see those from here? But they're just so prevalent and they're so freaking ginormous. Of course you can see them from here. And that's one of the benefits of it being, dadgummit, what was the term that they used? The sun was in a very active phase during the eclipse. I can't remember what the term is, but it was at, like, as like most active phase. So that's why we're able to see those protrusions, unlike you do in other solar eclipses, because of the activity from the sun. But yeah, it was just the longest and shortest 3.5 minutes of my life. I was like, but so yeah, I totally get why people travel across the world to watch them. They were just so breathtaking, so absolutely breathtaking. And to think I actually almost missed it. I was this close to canceling my trip just because the forecast was very, very iffy in Texas. Like, they were talking about like massive cloud coverage, and they were just, everyone, all the meteorologists and everyone, they're borderline counting it out. And I was checking my refund options, and I could have canceled I flew to Dallas that Saturday night, and I could cancel my trip like the day before. And I was like this close to actually doing it. Like, I was like, even in my mind, I was like thinking, like, oh, well, I could do this weekend. I don't really want to go through all the hassle of, you know, boarding and being stuck in Atlanta for 3 hours and everything. I mean, I was mentally ready to cancel that trip. But then there was just one YouTube video from a local meteorologist, and they just said, it doesn't look good, but we can't say that it's not going to happen. The chances aren't looking great, but we can't say no. And I was just like, look, this is a once in a lifetime experience, and I don't want to cancel that flight just on the slight off chance of it not happening. And then my coworkers who are based in Dallas, they're texting everyone back. It's like, oh my God, you won't believe it. The sky just happened to clear up right before the eclipse started. And funny enough, that's exactly what happened in Dallas. Like, 3 minutes before totality. Like, I actually like look at the time slots, like on my pictures, 3 minutes before totality, the sky just opened up clear as a whistle. It was so wow. Crazy.
I think the cloud cover helped for us. It wasn't very thick cloud cover. It was like kind of like a
haze. Yeah. I remember your pictures. It wasn't that bad in your case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really funny is where we were, we drove out to a field. Like, we just went way out, like, mm-hmm. far from the city.
Sure.
There were people just parked in different areas to watch it.
Yep.
You know, and they reminded me of leaf peepers in New England that go to see the fall foliage.
Oh.
Yeah. So
that's so cool.
Just tourists that were just pulled over.
Yeah, and that's what it was in Dallas too. Like, I mean, I didn't, where I was, like, I was like in a big collection of, like, there are a whole bunch of like hotels around the area. So I didn't have to drive out or anything like that. Some people who had hotels with balconies, they just watched on the balcony, and we had like a whole bunch of open fields and stuff. And like you said, like, I remember seeing like people who are just pulled over and pulled, they're in their cars and they just pulled over to the side of the road. And I was like, I'm not mad at you. They just turned on their emergency lights and no one behind them got mad. They were like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. No, this was more like way out in the nowhere.
Sure.
And so people were just pulling over like on a hill or like wherever they thought they had a good view.
Yeah.
But it was funny because we were right near like a pasture full of longhorn cattle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I was like,
oh, were they freaking out by any chance?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I was like, Adam, let's go for a walk and like just walk past these longhorn cattle and watch it. So we walked past them, and the cows were all staring at us. Like, like, they were like they were watching us, you know, in a really creepy way. Like they were not, none of them were grazing. They were all like, there was like four of them, and they were just,
it's like, you think we're herbivores, don't you? Come closer to find out.
I was a little nervous.
was there for reasons.
Yep. Yeah.
like
the sky's like, not right. I'm not right in my head right now. So test me.
Right. Exactly. Like it's getting dark.
You stole the sun.
Bring it back. Bring it back.
Yeah. Like, so I kind of got a little nervous. I was like,
oh, that's funny.
I mean, yeah, they're like giant cows with these giant horns.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you don't mess with those.
Yeah, you do not. They're 1,000-pound, you know, and they've got those giant longhorns. And they were very much paying attention to us, not to the grass, not to the hills.
Oh, that would have bothered me.
Yeah, it bothered me. Like, they were, they, like, watched us. Like, they kind of, like, kept turning in our direction.
No, dude. No, they... Yeah. That's some Twilight Zone level nonsense right there.
Like, it was.
Like, should we get back in the car? I'm not feeling good about this.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you know, my husband's all like, well, you know, we're just a strange thing for them. I'm like, they are paying.
They're domesticated cattle. They see humans all the time.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The solar noise has been blunting their intelligence. Yeah. And now they're aware of their captive.
Yep.
Walk quickly.
We, for the next 4 minutes, our minds have been awakened.
Yeah.
We understand everything. The fabrics of the entire universe are at the bending of our will right now. That'd be a great short story, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, you don't want intelligent longhorns.
Oh, no, man. No. You don't want intelligent anything beyond us, Moo.
Yeah, that's true.
Like I said, Moo, that'll be our language.
Yeah.
Well, oh, my gosh.
Some definitions of intelligent.
That's funny. Well, I'm glad you survived the experience.
Yeah. I'm glad we didn't get run over by or stampeded. Yeah.
Here in Utah, we got wall-to-wall media coverage.
Yay! Good job. Well, folks, how about we go ahead and transition into some nerdy news where we offer some sci-fi and fantasy book recommendations along with updates in nerd culture. Okay, so bear with me 1 second as I grab the book recommendation that we have. And this is called Living with Your Past Selves. And this is from author Bill Hyatt. And this is the first book in the Spellweaver book series. Okay, scrolling down. So many teenagers struggle to find their identity. But for Taliesin Weaver, that struggle has become life or death. And not just for him. Tal, as he prefers to be called, believes in reincarnation. And with good reason. When he turned 12, his mind was nearly shattered by a flood of memories. Memories of his past lives. Hundreds of them. Somehow, Tal managed to pull himself together and even to make good use of the lessons learned that skills developed in those previous lives. He even had the ability to work magic. Literally. And there was no denying that was cool. No, his life wasn't perfect, but he was managing. Now, 4 years later, his best friend, Stan, has begun to suspect his secret, and Stan isn't the only one. Suddenly, Tal is under attack from a mysterious enemy and under the protection of an equally mysterious friend whose agenda Tal can't quite figure out. An apparition predicts his death. A shapeshifter disguised as Stan attacks him. An old adversary starts acting like a friend. He and some other students get hurled into Anwen, the other world, face Morgan Le Fay, and only just barely get back alive. And that's just during the first month of school. By now, Tal knows he is not the only one who can work magic and certainly not the only one who can remember the past. He realizes there is something that he is not remembering. Something that could save his life or end it. Some reason for the attacks on him that, as they escalate, threaten not only him, but everyone he loves as well. In an effort to save them, he will have to risk not only his life, but even his soul. And once again, this is Living Your Past Selves, the first book in the Spell Reverb book series. And this is from Bill Hyatt. And this is available on Amazon. Okay, now in some other news. Oh no, where did it go? Uh-oh, I did not save this. Oh, goodness gracious. Hold on, stand by. Okay, I'm just going to click on the link in the messenger. So, coming between now and our next episode, Knuckles, the Echidna TV series, will be on Paramount Plus, that being April 26th. So, you can follow Knuckles, voiced by Idris Elba, on a hilarious journey of self-discovery when he agrees to teach Wade, played by Adam Pauly, the ways of the Echidna warrior. So the new live action event series follows Knuckles on a hilarious and action-packed journey of self-discovery as he agrees to train Wade as his protege and teach him the ways of the Echidna warrior. The series takes place between the film Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Once again, that is Knuckles TV series, and this is going to be premiering on Paramount Plus on April 26th. Now, transitioning into some gaming news, PS5 owners will be rejoicing because between now and our next episode, Stellar Blade will be available on the PlayStation 5 platform. So, ravaged by strange, powerful creatures, Earth has been abandoned, and what is left of the decimated human race has fled to a colony in outer space. Now, after traveling from the colony, 7th Airborne Squad member Eve arrives on the desolate remains of our planet with a clear-cut mission to save humankind by reclaiming Earth from the Nativa, the malevolent force that has devastated it. But as Eve tackles the Nativa one by one, piecing together the mysteries of the past and the ruins of human civilization, she realizes that her mission is far from straightforward. In fact, almost nothing as it seems. So once again, that is Stellar Blade, and this is going to be available on the PlayStation 5. The date that it actually comes out, let me see. I had another. Nope, not that one. Scrolling down. Not March. April, maybe? Stellar Blade. Yep, April. That's going to be coming out April 26th as well on the PS5. Okay, and some other nerdy news. Coming April 19th, so the day of this episode, the second installment of Rebel Moon, which is on Netflix, will be premiering. So this will be Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. So get ready to return to Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon as Part 1 hit Netflix in December 1st. But have no fear, Rebels, Part 2 is now available. So in the sequel to Snyder's space-bound epic, Korra and her revolutionary recruits face an enemy they thought they defeated. Admiral Actus Noble and the Imperial Legion he commands from the bridge of his flagship dreadnought, the King's Gaze. It will take all of their combined skills to free the villagers of Veld from the grip of Motherworld and to free themselves from their own tragic past. The first Rebel Moon stands alone, but Snyder was glad to have the opportunity to use the two halves of the epic for very different purposes. But hopes are that because we were able to do two films, that we're able to really invest in the characters for the first film so that the audience gets to really understand why they're fighting for the villages of Eld, he told Netflix. So in part two, it's time for that fight to begin. Read on to learn more about the battle for the future of the Rebel Moon universe. And you'll be able to read more on that via our show notes. Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you ever check out Rebel Moon?
I did not, no.
Okay. If, If I recall, I did say it's pretty much a retelling of the Seven Samurai or the Magnificent Seven. Even as the movie went along, I started to pick up on that nuance reference. But I was like, wait a minute, how many people do they have so far? If they get two more, that would be seven people altogether, won't it? Oh, and then you got these people oppressing this known village. I see what you guys are doing. So, it's a fun reenactment of that classic story with a sci-fi twist, and so I'll definitely be checking it out. I enjoyed the first one, the first installment, for what it was, and. Given I watched Magnificent Seven and Seven Samurai and Samurai Seven, the anime, I pretty much have an idea of how this is going to end, but it'll still be a fun in regards. Did you guys ever watch any of those classics by any chance? Seven Samurai, Scott? Okay. And Abby?
Yeah, I've watched them all.
Okay. Oh, okay, nice. Oh, some good classic movies right there for sure. So the first one that I saw was The Magnificent Seven, and then I saw The Seven Samurai probably 10 years after the fact. But yeah, pretty much the story has always like remained true and everything, and it's a good story. It's a fun classic. So if you ever get the chance to check it out, I definitely recommend it. But whatever the case, folks, if you want to stay up to date with our nerdy news or sci-fi and fantasy book recommendations along with updates and nerd cultures, be sure to check out the storiesfornerds.com website along with our Facebook group. So, folks, we have finally arrived to our latest story by nerd segment. So the last story was a sci-fi base. So we are going to be going back to the world of fantasy. And I am going to be starting off this segment, and then Scott will have the pleasure of doing the climax and the conclusion. But I have decided to call this story Snowfall. After breaking up at the frozen riverbank that morning, Madeline's party continued south for the mountains beyond the Fenland realm. Given it was the middle of summer, she was accustomed to the crisp breeze from the north offering a moment's reprieve from the blistering heat, though this was far beyond a normal summer for the young dwarven warrior. For when the breeze she often welcomed blew into her face, she found herself clutching her heavy hood as to prevent the wind from slicing through the several layers of leather and fur she had hoped would shield her from the blistering cold. Given her stature, Madeline found herself panning through her scarf as she pressed on with her far taller companions, who easily shuffled through and across the snow. Her acquaintances consisted of the party leader, an elven mage named Graylis, the orc berserker, Grey Ox, she called him Ox for short, a human priest by the name of Matthias, and then there was Zerith, a drow ranger. Despite having ventured with them for the past lunar cycle, Madeline still didn't consider any of them friends apart from Ox. Beyond him, none seemed to care a great deal for her besides what the party perceived her as being mere brawn and no brain. Such was why she got along with the orc more than anyone else, as he was tossed into the same category with her. Quite the unorthodox company of people, all things considered. However, the curse now plaguing the entire land was one that affected all the great races residing under the yellow sun of Argos. Oh yes, that glorious yellow ball filled with such vibrant life and power. The dark sorcerer, Lord Zenrock, had casted the entire world in a blanket of darkness for so long, the sun seemed but a memory, a dream even. All for an expectation that every nation would submit to him in exchange for an end to this indefinite winter. How fortunate for her that dwarves weren't the only proud lot of people. Regardless, 3 months without seeing the sky was excruciating, even for a dwarven lady like Madeline. Given her domain within the mountains, her people would go without seeing the great blue heaven for weeks, let alone months. To have its presence taken from them without a choice, however, such cruelty was beyond words. "Need a hand, little miss?" Ox asked the dwarf upon extending a hand. "The snow is bound to be up to your knees the further we press on." "Actually," Madeline said, "it's up to my knees ever since we left the frozen riverbank. But worry not, I can manage." The orc growled as he picked the dwarf up, lifting her to his eye level. She hated it when people treated her like a child or halfling. Dwarves were far more stout and sturdier, after all. "What nonsense, Maddie," Ox bellowed. "You and I are the vanguard of this rowdy bunch, and neither of us will be of any use if we were to succumb to exhaustion. Come, I have no quarrel with carrying you until we reach the next crossing." "While you may not, good sir, I most certainly do. I am not some feeble little thing that needs the pity of others." "Yes, yes," the orc said, rolling his eyes. "Your first and bravest of $5 to the great lord of the northern mountains and heir to House Firegate's throne. As much as I revere the lineage, your highness, we're all on the same team, thus we need everyone at their best. There be no shame in taking another's strengths when our own is not suited for the current situation." Madeline hated it when Ox did that, sounding like the queen mother, better known as Nana in her case. She scrunched her mouth and nose, wanting to protest all the more, though she failed to find the objections to do so. "Only until we reach the next crossing," she insisted. "Only until we reach the next crossing," Grey Ox assured her as he turned and took a knee. The dwarf was quick to climb up the orc's back, nuzzling her face into the fur collar of his cape upon sensing embarrassment flush her cheeks. "Aw, well, is that not the cutest thing you've ever seen?" Zareth hollered from the rear. "Mind your tongue, cold-skinned elf," Madeline hollered back. Priest Matthias nudged Zareth as he passed her by, amid the drow's giggles. "Leave her be. It's not her fault her physique wasn't made for such terrain." "Of course," Zareth said. "I only dressed in good fun. We're all friends here, with me being a cold-skinned elf and all. Is that not right, Lady Madeline?" The dwarf felt her blood boiling with such rage she found herself welcoming the chilled breeze brushing over her. When Ox passively cleared his throat, however, the dwarf set aside her anger. For being the shortest didn't omit her from being the bigger person, as father would say. "Correct, my lady," Madeline answered back to the dark elf. "And I am sorry for the inconsiderate slur, as it's not only unbecoming of one for my stature, but more so as a fellow being." "Good," Matthias said, resting a hand on the drow's shoulder. "And Zareth, do we have something we want to tell Lady Madeline?"
"I can't say I much do, sir."
"Zareth, oh, all right, fine. And I shouldn't poke fun at you so much. I'm sorry too, Maddie." Graylin scuffed across the snow ever so effortlessly until he reached Madeline and Ox at the front. He gave a notion to shielding his eyes as if that would help him see better through the snowfall, though Madeline and the others knew the mage could see through the snow far better than anyone. The elf's gesture was more likely one he had inadvertently picked up amid accompanying the other races over the past 300 years of his life. "We'll be upon the old plains of Yemlin by the next hour if we are to keep this pace," the elf said. Needless to say,
We won't be graced with acres of wheat as far as our eyes can see. Yet, we'll know where we've arrived once we've cleared ourselves of these trees. Beyond that lies a stone bridge, crossing over the next passage of the river. We're making good timing then, Ox noted. Our journey will officially be a tenth of the way complete. Aye, and I fear the journey shall only increase in troubles beyond that point as we cross over the mountains. Bah! Madeline laughed. I shall manage the mountains with little hassle. Why, I think I'll feel right at home. Actually, Maddie, Ox said, the snow will only worsen the higher we reach altitude until we clear the clouds. And once we're beyond the clouds, our greatest trouble will be that of the thinning air. We'll trouble those concerns upon arrival, Grayless insisted. In the meantime, we best enjoy the passage across the fields for all it's worth. And I would still propose that we keep to the security of the forest by going around the plains, Madeline objected. Grayless pressed on by the vanguards, pointing ahead with his staff. We've been over this before, Lady Madeline. If we are to suffer ambushes and the like by the enemy's forces, it will be done under the cover provided by the trees. Not to mention venturing along the path of the forest will add another month to our exodus. Respectfully, sir, the length of the exodus matters not if we don't survive it, Madeline countered. The trees are now without leaves, thus preventing an ambush from above, and they provide us with coverage. Going through acres of open fell not only leaves us exposed, but is far too predictable. The enemy knows we'll want to avoid any delays if possible. Grayless struck the ground with the bottom of his staff. The first time Madeline had seen an elf shown any hint of irritation. And with all my due respect, my lady, we did not ask for your guidance in terrain, but in combat. Once we arrive at the mountains, your counsel will be most welcome. But until then, I kindly ask that you dismiss these outbursts, as they have not and will not deter us from the path our charge agreed to take. There was again, diminishing Madeline's capabilities to be nothing beyond a fighter, despite her people embracing the most effective aspect to combat, avoiding it altogether, if possible. While dwarves were indeed a proud race with the physique to bear arms, that alone didn't mean they sought it out with blindness. One would think hearing caution from her kind would cause more consideration of thought, not jeering. Even so, the dwarf held her peace and didn't utter a word. As Grayless and the others passed, Marilyn and Ox, Matthias patted her on the head and smiled. Don't take it personal. That was what the human tried assuring her. Despite his best efforts, however, not being heard still pained her far more than any chill from the wind. Are you okay, little miss? Ox asked once the others were a good ways ahead. I wish I wasn't so stubborn, Madeline confessed. Perhaps if I were more composed and poised like you and Matthias, everyone would be more willing to hear my thoughts. If only a little. Perhaps, though you are still young, Maddie, by the standards to any race. You've a great deal to learn, and one such deal pertains to understanding when to pick the battles required of the tongue and not the axe or hammer. I suppose you're right, Ox, yet I simply hope I'm here long enough to learn such a lesson. Scene break. The spider having been on Gray Ox's back for what seemed like forever, Madeline still found him leading the party across the plains in great time. His pace hadn't let up for an instant, despite him having to carry not only herself, but also her added gear. Their words became few the further they went across the terrain. As the howling wind grew more ferocious since there weren't any natural obstacles blocking it. More so, she noticed Ox turning around every kilometer or so, to ensure he hadn't lost track with the rest of the party. Graylus was basically walking atop the snow, thus he was keeping up just fine. Matthias and the Drow were a little ways back near the rear, though they didn't seem too bothered by the exposure. All things considered, everyone was following along with little to no hassle. The trees they had vacated were barely in sight, though the forest continued along the northern path. Had they really wanted, the team still had the opportunity to change the course along the path, though Madeline knew such hopes were foolish. No, she couldn't fear what would be. This was the path her party had committed to. Then again, perhaps she had been overreacting this entire time. It was, as Ox said, she still had a great deal to learn. Such is why Father tasked her with being ambassador on behalf of her people. Not only was she the greatest warrior of House Firegate, this was also the perfect opportunity for her to become accustomed with the other races and governments of the known world. She'd be dealing with these people a great deal once the throne was hers. So what better way to become familiar with them than to journey among them with a common goal in mind? Ox stopped and held up a fist, pausing everyone to freeze in their tracks. "Did you hear that, little miss?" the orc whispered. "I didn't. What is it?" "We're not alone." Madeline hopped off the orc's back, axe in hand. "At the ready. Whatever it is, they best tread lightly, for all sakes." "Indeed," the orc answered, steadying his hammer. And that is the end to the first portion of Snowfall. All yours, Scott. Middle and conclusion.
Okay.
It's gonna be a kobold or a dragon or a giant or a troll or an ice golem.
Or. So many options. And I left it open intently for that reason. I was like, you know what? I could segue and set up the middle portion to what I have in mind. But I was like, no. This is a perfect spot to stop it. Just so Scott can have creative leeway and decide whatever is going to present itself. Is it friend? Is it foe? Is it neutral? Who knows? So, yeah.
It could be the dwarf's older or younger sister who's actually an ice queen and controlling an ice golem and became frozen.
That's a lot. Cool. I don't object to it.
Would you like to write the next section, Abby?
No.
Are you sure?
You seem to have a lot of.
I know, right?
I'm just giving you ideas.
All right.
You can reject them.
just saying.
It could be a creaky trap door that leads into a dungeon, and now they have to do a dungeon run.
The good old fashioned dungeon run never gets old. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying. I've been reading a lot of lit RPG.
Yeah, so see, you got so many ideas to work with.
Are you
right
sure
now.
You don't want to write the next segment, Abby?
No, I'm good.
It's only 2,000 words maximum.
I have to go travel.
Ah, that's fair. Going on the road and publishing books and all that jazz.
Something to do while riding on the airplane.
Oh, yeah, right? That's a long, you know what? That is a pretty decent flight. And like I said, I did my portion hella quick. So you're Abby Goldsmith. I'm sure you can knock it out.
You could write 2,000 words in a half hour.
Wow. Okay, hold on, Scott. I didn't say all that.
I mean, you write 400,000 word novels in a week, don't you?
Right.
I'll be.
Yeah, no. I don't use AI. My stuff is all human written.
Yeah, that part. Jeez. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that opening segment. And we've done these sorts of creatures before. We dabbled with elves and these sorts of parties, but our party members, our protagonists have always been human. I was like, why don't I change it up and give it to like one of the lesser, you know, one of the other races that really don't get like a lot of spotlight. It's always either humans or elves. No one shows a lot of love to the dwarves. So I was like, yeah, you know what? We're gonna get this from the dwarven perspective.
I like the character you set up. It's not a standard dwarf character, right? It's not gruff and angry. And so there's an interesting setup there, and I'm going to have to think about how to use that.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Yeah. And so I kind of turned a couple of things on the hills, like, because like even Ox isn't. Oxen himself, he's not like this dumb brute. He's very articulate, and he has like this nice, almost like fatherly mentorish bond that Madeline has. And then, the elf isn't the ranger. He's the mage, and he's the party leader, unlike the human. And the priest, well, and a lot of instances, priests are usually human, so I left that alone, but also, you don't usually have drows or dark elves in this party. Drows are typically on the other side of the spectrum. They usually serve the dark lord himself. They're usually in the bad guy party as well. So I was like, you know what? Let's throw a drow in here too. And that's why there was that little nudge, that little snarky comment that Madeline gave. Yeah. Whole skinned. I'm like, what? Yeah. So there's still a couple of those relationships that are typically commonplace in this sort of fantastic realm, but the core party itself is pretty unorthodox, pretty non-traditional. So Scott, if you want to have some fun with that, man, have at it.
I will hope to have some conversation before then. So,
oh, I love conversation.
This is not the kind of story I generally write. So I'm a little bit cast adrift here.
Very cool. Well, at that end, and I think that's going to even be more interesting, just because like you get to make this sort of story your own. In all the best ways. I trust you, dude. But yeah, that. So modest.
It's a bad idea. Don't trust me.
We'll see. We'll
after what you did to my character in the last story? Uh-huh.
Oh, no!
Uh-huh. Yeah, I wouldn't trust me if I were you.
Dude, you said I did a good job with Frizzy. Oh, dear. Now I fear for Madeline's well-being. What have I done? But like I said, hey, this is your story now. Have fun with it, dude. Oh, yeah. So that is going to conclude the first segment of Snowfall. And we will continue this story by nurse segment a month from now. But don't worry, just because we are going to continue this story a whole whopping month later, that doesn't mean you're going to have to wait to hear back from us by then. Just check back in another 2 weeks and we'll be having one of those nifty nerdy chat discussions. So, whatever the case, whether you like our nerdy chat episodes or story by nerd segments like this one, be sure to give us a like, heart, thumbs up, stars. Well, whatever the source of this podcast is, whether that is iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. I always try to think of where they're listed, but et cetera, you get the idea. But folks, that's going to do it for this episode of the Storage Runners Podcast. Hey, I'm Raphael, and joining y'all to keep thinking big on a collective level. This is Scott and Abby signing off. So, Scott, what's going to be that final send-off to our listeners?
Gooba gaba, gooba gobble. We accept you. One of us.
One of us. One of us. Wait, I'm sorry, whenever, when you... for what it's worth. Okay, so Abby, he told me this was what his send-off was going to be. And when you said one of us, that's all that I can hear in my head.